There you go, Matt. Give me the star.
Heard it? Yeah, I got this one kid, Austin, in my class. He's so annoying.
I honestly thought that was a flash drive. Like,
yeah, I'm going to put the flash drive up there.
Good morning. I think we'll get started. My name is Carla Hickson, and I work here at Bismarck State College, and I'll be the moderator for our industry and education panel. I will start by introducing our panel members. On what would be your left, on the left, is Dr. Jeremy Straub, and he's the assistant professor in the Department of Computer Science at North Dakota State University. Next to him is Mr. Matt Freilich. He's the associate professor of cybersecurity at Bismarck State College. And then next is Dr. Prakash. And he is the director of cybersecurity programs at the University of North Dakota. And on the end is Mr. Jeremy Newarth, and he's the president of TechND. So what the structure we'll use for today is I have shared with them two questions that we have prepared in advance for them to answer. And after that, I'd like to open it up for the audience. So you have a little bit of time to think of some questions that you might want to be asking our panel as we're preparing. I think to help our panel members as we're getting going, I think we see a lot of students in that. So how many are students? If you could raise your hand so we have a better. And how many are from industry? So a good half and half to help you as you prepare to answer the questions or who you're addressing. So. Recently, I read that there was an annual shortfall of around 5,000 information security analysts nationwide. Do you think this need can be met with new high school graduates going the traditional route of college, or should we be looking at re-educating the existing workforce to help meet this need? And if we're going to re-educate the existing workforce, what strategies do you employ to engage and educate them? So we'll start on this end with Jeremy, and I think you're going to let us know a little bit about you at NDSU and the programs that they have there, and then answer the question.
Sure, yeah. So again, my name is Dr. Jeremy Straub. I'm also the associate director of the NDSU Institute for Cybersecurity Education and Research, in addition to being a professor in the computer science department. You know, I think that this question kind of plays into what we're doing, and so I think I'll merge the two topics together.
Perfect.
Into one hopefully coherent combined answer. And so I think, you know, people coming out of high school, yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people are going to have to get up to skill with what they need to do to be going into these cyber jobs. And, you know, I mean, there's any number of statistics for, you know, the need for the workforce. The one I really like comes from a Forbes article where they actually did analysis showing that cybersecurity has negative unemployment right now, which means that as opposed to having a small amount of unemployment, which is what's kind of expected, that means that there's, you know, positions people move, but they're temporarily unemployed between that. We're actually talking about there being consistently more positions where people are effectively trying to poach people from other companies so that their position is filled and the other company has the gap. So there's clearly a big need. And so, you know, we need people to come from all different routes. We need people to come from high school, do the, you know, 2 years or 4 years or more of college or university. But we also need to be training people that already have a different skill set, and maybe it's a skill set that's no longer one that we need as much of, to actually bring them into this area of kind of new challenge. And I think that's where a lot of the stuff that we're doing at NDSU really kind of makes sense. It's really, you know, both of these challenges of trying to get people that are first-time college students, you know, coming right out of high school, as well as older students that are coming back for a variety of different reasons. And so just a few of the different things we're doing that are kind of relevant to this. We've brought the first cybersecurity-related research experience for undergraduates to North Dakota. This past summer, we had 12 students from all over the country come here to do bona fide research related to cybersecurity topics and cyber-physical systems, cybersecurity topics at NDSU. We had a Gen Cyber program, which is a program for high school students to prepare them them to go into whether it's a college or university or workforce direct or into the military, what we call in North Dakota choice ready, meaning that basically somebody is ready to make whatever choice they want coming out of high school. Gen Cyber is designed to get people interested in cyber as well as to start helping them build the skills that they actually need to succeed in that. And so we brought the first Gen Cyber program to North Dakota this past summer as well. That's funded by the National Security Agency and the National Science Foundation. And so we had about 60-some high school students from around the state, Minnesota, a few people that came from other states as well, doing that. We're hoping to do that again this summer with a residential version of that. We've also recently got a North Dakota EPSCoR funding to start doing assessment of showing how we're actually, all these kind of innovative techniques we're doing to try to increase student learning, to actually show what this is actually doing, how it's producing learning, and to actually start quantifying that. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. Whether you're graduating from college, having, you know, come to college for 4 years right out of high school, or 2 years or 6 years if you're doing a master's degree, or a little bit longer if you're doing a doctoral degree, or if you're coming, you know, back and you want to get a new, you know, a new occupation, new profession, you need a way to actually say, this is what I've learned. You know, and I mean, it's great having negative unemployment because people are a lot more willing to take a chance when they need somebody to fill a position desperately. But we also need to be able to actually show that what we're doing, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's through peer learning activities, or lots of other ways that people can learn, is actually having an effect. So that's one of our big focuses right now, too, is actually measuring the learning that's occurring through all these different techniques and allowing you to compare something that you might learn in an industrial training to a college class, to a peer learning, you know, a loosely structured peer learning activity. So that's another big thing we're doing, and I'll try to hit up the other ones quickly here and get us going down. But a few of our other kind of key things we've done recently, we've just opened a 1,200-square-foot new facility devoted to robotics and cybersecurity. We've recently put together a really great cyber range. Demetrius right here actually just got back from Greece, where he was presenting on that at a conference. I'm going to mess up the name of the International Conference on Interactive Collaborative Learning. So that's another real neat thing. And we're doing a lot of different stuff there. So I won't go through my whole list. I'll come back to a few of my other points later on. But, you know, so I think there is a lot. I think both of the approaches to learning that you mentioned, you know, both kind of first-time college entrants as well as people coming back, whether they're coming to a college or university or going to industrial training, we have to support both of them. But we also have to, and this is really, I think, the critical thing, we have to be able to show that learning is occurring and that people are ready to go into these positions. Otherwise, we're not really doing, or at least we can't show that we're doing our job. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Matt Fralick, Bismarck State College. So we have a AAS, Associate in Applied Science and Cybersecurity, and we'll be starting a bachelor's degree in the fall in cybersecurity and information technology. And I think that's a great question, Carla. I think that's what's keeping HR people up at night, right, is where do we get these people from? And I think we can draw from the high school ranks, but, you know, high school students might not know exactly what they want to do when they graduate high school, so we can't rely on them because they may choose different career paths. So I do think we need to re-educate some current workforce. And, you know, one way we can do that is to reward them for their current skills. Here at BSC, we have credit for industry. You know, so if you're out in the field and maybe you do a little bit of networking, we might be able to reward you for that so you wouldn't have to take a networking class. We also need to be flexible for those types of students. Online classes, we're really trying to push everything we do online. So if you want to do the bachelor's degree or the AAS, you can do it online 100%. And that's huge because these people have, you know, lives and family, and they're taking the chance of re-educating themselves to, you know, go down a new career path, and we need to be conducive to that. So I think, you know, that's what we're really striving for here at BSC. We work a lot with industry. We try to create transferable skills. We want our students to know that what they learn here at BSC is going to translate to a job. So we work a lot with industry around North Dakota and actually throughout the nation now. We have a great partner with Palo Alto, and they kind of look at our program, see what we're teaching, give us some insight. Is that the right path? Are we teaching the right classes? Are our students marketable? Can they go out and get a job? And when they are out in the workforce, are they productive? Are they able to take what they learned in the classroom and transfer it to a job? So for us, we're really focused on workforce. Like you said, like Jeremy said, you know, we really want to be measurable. Can we say that our students are educated enough to go right out into the workforce and get those jobs. So that's, you know, kind of our strategies and some of the ways I think in which we can tackle that is we need to draw from multiple areas, whether they're the high school student, the traditional high school student, or current workforce. And another thing I'd just like to point out is, you know, cybersecurity is in every industry. So it doesn't matter if you're in healthcare or automotive or education. You're going to need some sort of cybersecurity personnel. And you can see all the statistics that are out there. There's going to be a workforce shortage. And we're just, I think all of our schools are just trying to do a little part of that. We can't just, you know, educate the whole world here at BSC. We can just do our little part to help our state and our region. And we hope that, you know, that will kind of spread throughout the nation and other schools and cities are doing the same thing. So
I echo Prakash from UND. You know, I'm a professor in electrical engineering. I'm also the director. We also have an institute called Research Institute for Autonomous Systems. I'm leading the data and cybersecurity research direction for that particular center. We have launched a couple of new programs, BS in cybersecurity online, MS in cybersecurity online, and also PhD in electrical engineering and data science and master's in data science, all online programs. So we are very, like you said, you know, the question is re-educating, right? I would start with re-educating with faculty, you know, because this is a very new evolving area that even faculty is not aware how to train and equip certain skills first. So I think in our program, what do we do differently? We invite industry people to come and teach for some courses so that we understand the real world problems, you know, in their perspective and see how that can give hands-on experience, whether it's virtual labs or, you know, whatever the concept that we cover in cybersecurity. Of course, UND is your company, so whatever Jeremy said, UND does more than that. So.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You threw down the gauntlet early here.
But and my PhD and master's from NDSU, you know, I've been at UND for 11 years now, so I cherish both the institutions anyway. So, but still, we have to work together, you know, and we collaborate, we also complement a few things. So at UND, you know, one of the interesting thing that we also do, we make sure they have co-op and internship that provides hands-on experience with cybersecurity companies. So we have companies like Rockwell, IBM, 3M, came forward to provide this opportunities for our students part of this program. So that's something that we are actually mandating as part of the hands-on requirement portion. Of course, you know, other than the universities and colleges, I think there are some certification level courses what BizMarx is leading in offering and training these high school students or going into transition to two-year certification, which is very important for satisfying the immediate need in a technical level at for a configuration level opportunity or positions. More than, you know, at the university level, we have, in my lab, we have at least 15 undergraduate students that provide opportunities to get involved, know about cybersecurity research. You know, we have done this through a wide variety of mechanisms. Some are get paid, some are through a program called Grand Challenge Scholarship Program, which is a National Academy of Engineering's program. One of 40 schools are recognized underneath that. You know, so they have to do a research project. They have to be coming up with a topic that can commercialize into a new IP products. You know, so, and also at UND, we also do hackathon. You know, there are different cyber camps that also that we are part of organizing this, and we are doing another one in October. It's a month of cybersecurity, so we are organizing an October seminar series. You know, inviting a couple of other people from industries, academia, and other sectors too. So I can talk more about these different initiatives too. But yes, I agree. I echo that re-educating the workforce, re-educating faculty. You know, and how can we do this? We all need this collaborative thing. You know, we can't do everything like you said, and I think. It has to come from industry, academia, you know, and community also be actively participating in this effort to make sure that we have a resilient educational program that actually skillfully prepare our students.
All right, Jeremy Newhart from TechND. For those that don't know who TechND is, I'm the industry, so I have the least amount of numbers or I don't have doctor in front of my name or any of those type of things. So basically business. TechND is a member organization of around 90 businesses throughout North Dakota that is focused on helping champion technology within the state. So what does champion technology within the state mean? So basically, number one, we focus on advocacy. So we come down and we try to make sure that there's good policy around technology. We try to work on initiatives like Operation Intern, for example, or work on different standards, or work with educational institutions to try to get excitement around technology or further technology. The second piece that we tend to work on beyond advocacy is workforce. So if you talk to, and we've already mentioned it up here and it's even in the question itself, out of every 10 businesses that I talk to, 9 of them will say workforce is their number one or at least one of their top 3 priorities. So we are way short on the number of people that we need, and I'll circle back around to that. The third thing that we do is just general tech championship, where we'll do things like events, or we'll networking events, speaking, or even do awards within the state of North Dakota, just celebrating technology overall. So regarding the workforce issue, I would say that we are pretty much at the point over the last few years where we're all of the above type of strategy. So we don't care who it is, what it is. If there is an idea that we think has any sense of working, we're like, how can we support this? How can we engage on it? So everything from, you know, supporting events like this and communication, all the way to longer term solutions. Like right now we're working on K through 12. North Dakota, if you guys don't know, is going to be one of the first states that's going to have a computer and cyber science standard. So we're combining computer science and cyber science standards for K through 12. So in other words, we're going to say, in order to graduate from a North Dakota school, we want you to have these base foundational technology and security knowledge, so that it doesn't matter if you want to be a nurse, for example, and go off into that program. It doesn't matter if you want to go off into the military. It doesn't matter if you want to go to a 2-year, 4-year program. You're going to have this base knowledge that you can use wherever that you want. So those are some of those initiatives that we're working on. Other options we have, again, going back to all of the above, doesn't matter if it's some sort of code school, it doesn't matter if it's a certification program, or even apprenticeship. We are definitely out there saying we're willing to do things that we haven't so much in the past, just to keep up with the demand. Because I would say most of our organizations would say we can't do the things that we want to do. We can't grow the way that we want to because we are held down by this. And it's not going to be just high school students. It's not going to be re-educating our current staff. It's not going to be looking at pulling people out of retirement. All of those are going to have to be done in order for us to get to even just a base level, not even a growth level of where we want to be. So we're definitely at that critical point of saying it doesn't matter what it is, we're interested if we can support it and it makes sense.
Jeremy, since you talked about the high school and the K-12 initiative, this next question relates to that, so we'll come back the other way because I'll let you keep continuing because you started addressing it a little bit. So how prepared are high school students to step into the higher ed setting for cybersecurity degree programs? And I know you talked a little bit about one of the things that you're doing to better prepare them. Could you talk a little bit more about the preparation and initiative or others?
So I'd probably say the key thing that we're trying to do around the standard is first have that foundational knowledge. So I would say that a lot of us see having, and not necessarily knowing how to program a certain way or knowing how to network a certain way, but what are those foundational skills that you need to have to know that even, again, if you're a nurse, you're going to use computers. So how does that computer work? When we're going through math, for example, we start off at the basics, right? And then we keep on going into different specialty areas, but we never really go into the basics when we talk about security or basic computer digital literacy type of skills to understand those things so that, number one, you can do some more exploration in your career. Like, what option do you want to take, number one? So if we teach some of those basic skills, if somebody, when they're thinking about technology or security, they might be thinking they're going off into, some back room, back in the corner, but maybe they have a real passion around agriculture. Well, that's cool if you want to go into agriculture, but can we have you be able to use the tools of technology to do something more impactful within agriculture? So in other words, how can you combine the domain with these tools that we have? And same with security. So we hear it over and over again in these talks where, people are talking about, well, when we built this solution, we weren't really thinking about security. Well, so I also own a software company that writes security software for banks. So we're constantly thinking about security, but it's amazing. Even 10 years ago when I was building systems, we didn't think about, well, what happens if so much. We didn't think about risk, and we definitely weren't thinking about it 20 years ago. So having that knowledge of understanding why, should you be, I'm going to mention passwords, and passwords are horrible, but why should you be changing your password, or why should you be protecting your password? Just understanding that at a base level is really going to help further on. So those are definitely some of those tactics and things that we're trying to do for the next generation, but I'll also say those are all longer term solutions, unfortunately. So we are looking again for shorter term solutions on what's programs, what's certifications, what are things that we can do to re-educate current workforce.
So I think I would say the answer is very limited preparation with my interaction with high school teachers and the standards. Every now and then, go to any high school, how many of those students are actually taking AP classes in computer science? There is only a handful of schools available in the state actually preparing them to even go for this advanced placement test in computer science, which is a very key. If you're going to do cybersecurity type of work, you need to understand computer science, and you need to have some sort of programming skills to get to be succeeding in understanding the cybersecurity. I think we should start from this area where middle school and high school level, how in preparing them to showcase why coding is nice, what is the impact of software all over in different applications, because all these data breaches and everything that's occurring, the impact of software is everywhere. So I think understanding and creating an awareness of this computer science field is a very key first fundamental step that we have to do and that have to relate to the high school teachers. I went to a Las Vegas, a cybersecurity conference, international conference, one of the largest gathering in the world, and there were some papers accepted, and this gentleman comes and presents this. I thought he must have a master's or a PhD, whatever, some graduate degree. After this presentation, he was presenting a blockchain paper. So after this presentation, I talked with him. Who are you? What do you do? And I said, IBM. How did you get? He got into this IBM from high school. Okay, he doesn't have any undergraduate degree, no degrees. Okay. But he said, Prakash, I took an internship, applied for IBM as an internship to this IBM, and they hired him. Being a high school student, all he was a self-learner. He was taking these courses in Coursera, different types of other non-traditional way of learning and preparing himself for these next generation concepts. And now he's a full-time employee without any degree, leading part of the blockchain team in IBM, so what does that tell me? We are in the university, so there are different types of groups of students, of course. So what I'm saying here is that, we have to have some sort of a structured mechanism in place that equips this group of students that we are in need to create this workforce. We should start naturally from the AP and other computer science programming courses to start in this type of domain. So that is my view on this.
Yeah, I've been teaching for 13 years now at BSC, and I would say that my first student 13 years ago to my students now, sorry, I'm going to throw you guys under the bus a little bit, my students. The skills are pretty much the same, with the exception that my current students are very technologically savvy. They know how to use their phone. They know how to program. You guys don't have VCRs, but I'm dating myself. But you know how to program your gadgets, and they're very techy in nature. But when it comes down to the skills you need for a job, like networking and IP addressing and those kind of hands-on skills that I mentioned before, that's where the skills gap is. And I'm actually on that standards committee that you mentioned. And it just kind of goes to show you where we are at. We're going in the right direction. We have an initiative we're calling it K20W, where we're trying to educate students in the kindergarten level all the way through workforce in cyber education. But in the standards meeting, I would say 90% of the room was librarian and media specialists. And so that was kind of an eye-opener for me. In the high school level, who's doing this training is the librarian and media specialists. They don't have a computer teacher. They don't have a cybersecurity teacher. So there's a little bit of a disconnect there, but I think we're making steps in the right direction. And I think we're going to get there. We've talked to a lot of industry people, and they said that North Dakota is ahead of the game with this. I think Virginia is kind of the gold standard that we're trying to look up to with a lot of this, you know, K through 12 training. So I think it's coming. But right now, you know, I would say that for the most part, our students have a passion for technology. They're very techy, but they are lacking some foundational skills, and I think that's going to come, and that's really going to help the workforce going forward.
So I think the preparation for going into whatever, whether it's going to IBM right out of high school or going into college or university, you know, it is kind of what it is. I mean, you know, as a university, we take students from all over the place. We have people coming from both coasts. We have people coming from all over Minnesota. So even if we do K-20, great in North Dakota, you know, people in Minnesota are not going to have that same skill set. So I think really the key is we have to be ready to take people from wherever they are, you know, realizing that there's a base skill set, and that's why we have things like the SAT and the ACT and admissions applications and whatnot to make sure that people are at that base level and bring them to where they need to be. And for some people, that may not be too big of a jump. For other people, it may be a little bit more of a leap. And I think really the key, though, is for the people that do come to a university or a college, you know, kind of like Prakash's example, the guy that went to IBM, if that guy, you know, that was going to IBM had decided to come to a university instead, you know, making sure that we can actually offer something that takes wherever the person is and helps them get to somewhere beyond. And I think one of the things that we've been doing at NDSU that's really kind of neat in this regard is this peer learning effort that a variety of different students have been engaged in. And so this is an opportunity where people are actually going out and they're saying, I want to learn more about this, you know, this topic. And we've done these in malware analysis. We've done these for preparations for some of the cyber contests and a lot of other different things. And, you know, so these are things where some of it, you know, overlaps with our curricular content. Some of it has nothing to do, you know, with something that we actually have a class on. But, you know, it's very clear that learning's happening there, and it goes off in a lot of different directions, and it's very powerful. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, colleges and universities can actually take people, again, from wherever they start and get them to a point where they can hopefully be very valuable to the workforce. And again, I guess I come back to my refrain here of assessing this and actually being able to say, when people are leaving, this is where they are. Because fundamentally, if you can't tell employers that you know, somebody is ready to do X, or at least that they have skills that the employer could assess and say, okay, that's what I need, you don't necessarily have a particularly useful credential, because it, you know, if the employer has to, you know, give people 43 different tests to figure out whether they can want to employ them or not, that's really not buying into the credential that the institute or educational provider is actually providing. And so, you know, again, I think that's why it's so important to be able to show, you know, across all different types of activities, whether it's peer learning, whether it's distance ed, whether it's on-campus ed, whether it's corporate training providers, that there is, you know, what the equivalency is and actually translating this back into terms that hiring managers understand and can actually say, okay, this is what I need or this isn't what I need, but it, you know, can save a lot of wasted effort, both for the graduate or applicant to the job as well as for the hiring manager who doesn't have to hire somebody and find out that maybe they're not meeting the skill set needs. So I guess that's where I would leave it.
Great. And so I'll open it up now for questions from our audience.
Yeah, Jeremy kind of made mention of foundational skills, and Matt, you kind of mentioned some specific skills, but from each person, what are the foundational skills you're trying to teach your students in the cybersecurity program? I know in EE, kind of that's a little different, and I am from industry, so I can tell you it's hard to hire people, and so I'd love to know what are the foundational skills you're trying to give these folks as they come to your program.
So, you want me to start?
Sure.
So I think in our undergraduate program and cybersecurity, I think they need to know how to work with the virtual environments. They need to know tools like Kali Linux, and they need to know some machine learning tools, TensorFlow, to understand to see how data can be exploited. You know, so and programming skills, you know, operating systems, you know, database, you know. So these are a networking, you know, that you're afraid to. These are some fundamental skills that I think they know. It's not new. It's already integrated in the computer science world, but I think you're going to learn that key courses, and then you're going to see a different perspective how, you know, a SQL injection attacks occurs in database. How can you have this enormous, huge, big data that outside, how can people able to exploit for identifying these patterns of false injection attacks or different types of attack vectors? So I think understanding and this type of new skills that requires programming, you know, programming skills, operating systems, that's my view.
Here at BSC, our program is really designed by our industry panel, and there's a few people in the room like Troy Walker from MDU that, like I said, they sit with us and tell us, you know, what we should be teaching. So our area really in our AAS, we have four main foundational areas I always tell people. We have security, networking, Windows administration, and Linux administration. Then we pepper in a few classes like database, computer hardware, a little bit of web design. And those are kind of your foundational IT skills we feel. And then our BAS, which we'll be offering in the fall, we can now get kind of focused in on a few more areas, like virtualization, some pen testing classes, hacking. I'm trying to think what else we are putting in there. We partner with Palo Alto Networks that I mentioned, and we'll be teaching some of their firewall technologies. We'll also be doing a little bit of policy and procedure class and incident response and those sorts of things as well. So, you know, here at BSC, we feel like we can turn the ship, so to speak, pretty quickly. So if we get input from someone on our advisory panel that says, you know, really you should be teaching this instead of that, you know, within a matter of a semester, we can make that change. So for us, we're very agile. You know, in higher ed, it's hard to be agile, but I think we're as agile as we possibly can be. And that, you know, really ensures that the people that we are graduating are going to be successful in the field. So that's kind of what we pride ourselves here at BSC is, you know, workforce ready.
And so I would take a slightly different approach to this than you guys have. I think from a little bit of my background, I came back and did a PhD after spending a lot of time in industry and hiring a lot of people. So that tends to shape my view of a lot of different things. And I think, you know, one of the things you can do is you can get people ready for the first job, and that's great. You know, that's a big thing, and that's very important. But, you know, if somebody is going to be, you know, going to a college or university for 4 years or 5 years or 3 years or 2 years or whatever the magic number is, we also need to be giving them skills that are going to help them beyond that first job, help them make the transition to the second job or the third job. Because right now we know that people that are graduating, you know, today or a year from now or 2 years from now are probably not going to be staying with the same firm for most of their career. You know, there was a model, many, many years ago where people would get a job right out of college, the company would invest heavily in them, and when they would, you know, retire from there 40, 50 some odd years later, that's not the current model. And so I think one of our key focuses with the program that we've designed and that we're operating at NDSU is really helping people learn how to learn about these topics. And really, you know, so we obviously have a lot of curricular standards that we have in place. Our program is integrated inside our existing computer science degree program, so we're not trying to have a specific cybersecurity program. At this point, we do have a graduate certificate, but even that's designed to be kind of done with other things as well, not necessarily as just a standalone where that would be your sole credential. We have students that are maybe doing that with a master's degree or a PhD, or people that already have some sort of a degree and are coming back. But, you know, all of these different things, you know, again, we want students to learn kind of how to learn about this topic. We want them to learn, of course, the fundamentals of computing, computer science, how to make software, how to fix that software when it doesn't work, how to test that software and actually make sure that it is working. And then all of the stuff we do on cyber. In addition to that, you know, how to validate the performance of the software through hacking techniques, laws and policies that relate to the cybersecurity and to computing in general. So, you know, it really is kind of a broad base that we look at, you know, in terms of what we're structuring around. And I think that, you know, I think hopefully not just prepares people to go get a job right off the bat, but also prepares them to prepare themselves perhaps for that second or third or fourth job down the road.
You know, that we have a lifelong learning component that's there in all any programs that you look at it. So certainly, yes, that's an important element that that everybody and all the programs has. But in addition, the question was more on the type of fundamental courses, right? So I guess computer science courses are very key in area. In addition to the hardware side of it, you know, and the EE world, you know, a lot of ICs, the electronics chips, there are so many distributors out there. There are a lot of counter-fledged different types of chips, and how do you actually, you know, authenticate these type of hardware words. So there are, this dimension is very multidimensional. It's not a single thing that has, say, CS or, you know, EE. It has, from the teaching them the mindset of attacker, you know, to see how to see this particular problem itself is a type of learning that we need to cultivate in this particular program, you know. So so it's a wide variety of answers to this question.
I would say it's definitely a hard question to answer from the standpoint it kind of depends on where the spectrum you're on. I'll say one thing that we have failed as industry, especially in the technology and security area, is we've gone to our universities and we said, we want you to know this specific language, or we want you to know this specific type of hardware. And we were always continually coming back to all of our education systems and saying these specifics. And one thing I feel that kind of the youngness or inexperience of the technology industry compared to some other areas like nursing or welding, they talk a lot more about the fundamentals. And I think Jeremy touched on, you know, a lot of those of, you know, when you are writing a program or the syntax of a program isn't the difficult part. It's being able to look at the human problem and say, how can I make this dumb computer that just knows on and off and some simple logic actually provide value? So, you know, having all the syntax and all that kind of stuff kind of comes later. So it's those critical thinking type things. It's, you know, when you're, again, down in elementary, being able to understand decisioning or logic, those are the things that I think, you know, continue to build. And then when you get into these programs, like the closer you're getting to workforce, the more tactical you're getting versus strategic. So it's a very hard question to answer. If you guys ever have a chance to look at standards or be on a standards board, it's extremely grueling and not the most exciting work, but I'll tell you it was one of the most enlightening things. So I'm not an English person, and I actually was on the English standard, and it's crazy the amount of knowledge and experience, and it really churned a lot of my thoughts on what are we telling our educational sources what we want versus what we really need. And I think that we had for a long time disconnect, and I think we're getting closer to solving that, but we still have a ways to go.
You know, I was part of National Science Foundation's cyber education project at a national level, you know, shaping, talking about the accreditation for the cybersecurity program. Speaking of, again, the curriculum, the key element what I missed out also is the psychology perspective. A lot of universities now adding psychological courses, you know, also human-machine interface. So I think, you know, there is different dimensions. Not only the technical side is important, but the human side that you're referring to is also very critical and actually give a well-rounded education that prepares them for the next generation problems.
Other questions?
Are you at your schools keeping track of the metrics of we graduated this many students, they placed in these other parts of the country with these jobs, so that you're kind of going back comparing your programs to what do we have that's helping place them? They're aware of these, you know, we know that we're working to this goal.
Well, assessment, again, Jeremy mentioned, we all have to do assessment every year, right? You know, I was undergraduate director for many years. We have to track, we have an industry advisory board. We track how many students are placed in cybersecurity. We track from electrical engineering point of view the list of companies they go into, of course, the type of designation they go into. We don't track by the type of cybersecurity or the roles. You know, we haven't gone to that type of level yet. But certainly, you know, our students have placed in all global companies and local companies anywhere. So,
and I guess from our perspective, we're trying to do assessment more granularly than that. And so knowing where people go is certainly a big thing. One of the things that we have done, not so much in cyber, but in other areas over a period of time, is going back and trying to connect with graduates after a certain period of time and try to get, you know, now you're a few years out. What was helpful? What wasn't helpful? What do you wish you had learned that you didn't learn? What do you wish you had learned earlier or, you know, maybe had more emphasis placed on? So that's kind of an effort that has been going on for a variety of time. And we actually had a speaker last year when we had our Computer Science Education Week that highlighted a lot of those points. And he kind of came back and told the students that were there, this is what I wish I had known if I could go back and kind of send a message back through time to myself. So that's certainly a big element of it, Tony, like you mentioned. But we're also trying to get leading metrics as opposed to a trailing metric. So the difference here is a trailing metric, like looking at placement, tells us kind of where we were a few years ago. And that's great. I mean, that's important. And fundamentally, that's kind of the measure of success, right? I mean, if you think about what are graduates going to go off and do, how are the skills that they hopefully learned and are now using going to help them? That's where we're trying to get to. But we also want to know how we're doing in terms of producing now. And so course level assessment metrics as well as skill level assessment metrics are really key to actually being able to say, okay, you know, in this course we had people that came in with this skill set and they left with this different skill set that we enhanced in this area or we enhanced in another area. And so as part of the REU programs, the Research Experience for Undergraduate programs that I've been involved in for a few years in a few different contexts now, we have very strong metrics with that. We have surveys that we do. We have a few other types of assessment that we do that we've applied to those. And we are beginning to get enough now that we're actually doing this longitudinally where we can compare different REUs on different topics as well as comparing the REU to different types of programs. And we actually have a protocol pending right now with our internal review board that approves subject research, human subject research, that's going to actually expand that into all other types of curriculum as well. So we'll be able to assess the peer learning activities that I've mentioned a few times. We'll be able to assess courses and really kind of use a shared metric so that we can actually quantify what are students learning from all of this different stuff that they're involved in and how does it compare from activity to activity to activity. And that's very powerful because it helps us put the resources where we get the most bang for the buck to really try to make it so we're producing the best product possible, realizing that we won't get the actual kind of tried and true results. You know, like you mentioned, Tony, the success, where do people go for a few years, but at least gives us something to plan and to actually make decisions in, you know, near real time about in the interim.
Here at BSC, you know, typically I only have the students for 2 years, so they're a little bit easier to track, I guess. For us, we track where they get placed, you know, what companies they're working for, what cities, what states they're in, as well as how much they're making, if they're willing to share that information with us. Because, for us, I've kind of harped on this workforce thing, but when a student typically comes into my office and says, you know, what opportunities are in cybersecurity, their next question is, how much am I going to make? So we try to give them as much insight into that as possible. And so we are always working with our graduates. Hey, where are you working now? You know, how much are you making? And it can be informal things too, like Facebook group and just seeing our students around the community and asking, you know, what did you like, what didn't you like, those sorts of things. So to your question, Tony, yeah, we're always tracking our students and trying to get a beat on, you know, where they're going after our program is done.
I think we have time for one more question.
I was just kind of curious. I know that by the way, I represent ITD State. I work with many of you on the K20W initiative. So strategically, we're all partnering with universities. We're partnering with doing stuff at the state level and K-12. What are the universities, and is this maybe a potential opportunity for the universities in K-12 to partner? And the universities, since you want to prepare these students for college, what kind of partnership do you see there, and how do you see yourself working with K-12 in various programs to help prepare them for college, especially in the area of technology, technological innovation, AI, machine learning, across the board? I mean, we already have K-12 working on second graders who are coding and programming and getting involved in robotics, but how do you see the university's role in helping facilitate that and even push for additional educational opportunities between K-12 and university?
That's a very important question. I think I would say my view on this is how university faculty and K-12 faculty can sit together and see if we can able to, we have to train, university faculty need to hear from their perspective to make sure what their skills are. At the same time, how can university faculty can be a resource for them to, you know, use this as a training opportunity to get some hands-on skills, and that can they can go back and relay at those individual K-12 systems. So I think NSF has programs like research experience for teachers, you know, training, you know, so we have to go through some sort of funding mechanism to help them to make sure in the summer they hear and do this type of activity.
And I think you have a good point. You know, I think you know, we have two roles as a university in this game. One is we can help train students directly. The other is obviously we provide the training to the teachers that gives them the credentials or allows them to seek the credentials that they need to actually be you know, to be able to work in the classroom. You know, we have two things that we've done at NDSU that I think are directly responsive to this. I take it back, three. I don't want to leave Brian's out here. I don't want to do that. So this past summer, we actually had a group through a Google Award. Brian Slater, who's a professor in our department, got an award for training teachers from all over the state. I think I'm going to get this off. I think it was about 30 teachers that came in and got this training. We're in the process of making a teaching certificate specifically relating to the computing requirements. That's another program that Brian is leading. More specifically related to these students, we had this Gen Cyber program over the summer, and that's bringing in students from all over again, you know, the place to actually train them and get them excited about, you know, all these different things that they can do. And you know, one of the things that I've always been very excited about is the students that come in with robotics experience, right? They've come in, they've done first Lego League or first robotics because they're already really passionate about robotics. I think we can do something similar in cyber. I think Gen Cyber is part of it. And you know, this is the type of thing where I think we can reach down into K-12, not replace what the K-12 educators are doing, because that's certainly not our role, but give them extra things where, you know, we kind of let the students kind of peek behind the scenes at the next level, get excited about coming to the college or the university level, and then also let them actually start interacting. And I like to use the term super peers, where, you know, if they're interacting with a freshman or sophomore as a junior or senior in high school, this is somebody that's only a few years older than them, but it's for a lot of them where they want to be in a few years. And that's a really powerful thing that we can provide, that I think we're uniquely positioned to provide at the university level. The other thing that I would mention, I guess my third point here, you know, we at NDSU, we run the Science Olympiad for the state. I agreed to be the co-director of the Science Olympiad this year. I don't know exactly what that entails yet, but, you know, and so stuff like that where we have the students thinking about how to get involved in science generally, whether they decide they want to go into biology or chemistry or math or physics or, you know, computing and even cyber more specifically, helping create that excitement through, you know, again, programs like the robotics, like, you know, the Science Olympiad and other stuff, I think can be really powerful too.
I would just say I think our role is to provide opportunities and support. supporting the instructors, opportunities like the camps, like he mentioned, just to kind of work our way down into the K-12. And instructor in the K-12 needs some training, we can provide that. If they want us to come into the classroom, we can provide that. If we can get into the schools and do a camp to get students excited about cyber and the potential career possibilities, that's something we can provide too. So I really feel that's, you know, kind of where our role is. You know, being a community college, we work, you know, pretty closely with the Bismarck community, so we can get into those schools quite easily and help out wherever we're needed.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for the industry and education panel. Thank you to our panelists for coming and agreeing to participate today. And with that, lunch is next. So for our participants, the lunch is that way. For students, North Dakota National Guard is providing you lunch in room 436, which is this way. So thank you very much.
Nice job, man.
Thanks, you too.